around than we've had in recent days, and that pegs our high back to just 15 for Belfast. For Scotland, more cloud coming into the northwest. Again, not bringing too much in the way of rainfall amounts, but I think a damper story towards the northwest. Best of the sunshine in the east, where we could see temperatures up to 19 in the southeast. That might just be warm enough, though, to give us the odd heftier shower through the latter part of the afternoon across southeastern Scotland. In the west, with more cloud around, we're looking at a high of 15 in Glasgow, which is 6 degrees down on the 21 we saw on Thursday. Howard.
Many thanks, Susan. Now on BBC Radio 4, Book of the Week. In The North and Almost Everything in It, music journalist Paul Morley contemplates the North and what it means to be a northerner. Today, after somewhat lackluster school days and a family life that seems to be unravelling in front of him, the outside world finally pours into the teenage Morley's life at Manchester's Free Trade Hall, with additional voices from Paul Hilton.
In 1968, I took my 11-plus examination. I was a bright but unremarkable boy and wanted people to think I was smart because it made me feel good. Assuming I passed, I would then go to the single-sex Marlin Grammar School, also known as Stockport School. For those who failed the 11-plus, their next school would be Reddysvale Comprehensive. Throughout my childhood, I heard dark rumours about what went on at this vast, low-lying, post-war concrete school, lurking at the edges of the picturesque vale. There were hints of initiation ceremonies involving toilets, heads, flushing, and even knives, muscles, fists, and bloody noses. The terrifying thought of this school, which seemed to belong to the 19th century, a cousin of the Gothic Strangeways prison in Manchester, encouraged me to do so well in my 11-plus that I leapt above the medium-level Marlin Grammar and won one of the scholarships that went to the 15 top children in all of Cheshire, giving me a place in a school that seemed 19th century in an entirely different way, Stockport Grammar. Before I went, all I really knew was that it did not play football, that you had to wear a uniform that featured an ornate peaked cap, that the teachers addressed you by your surname, and that the kind of boys who went there bullied you in a different, less physically aggressive way than the kids who went to the comprehensive. My dad was very proud of how well I'd done and could see doors opening to a career in accountancy, even a place at university. Of all the boys at the school, certainly in my class, travelling in each morning from leafy Bramhall, Wilmslow and Cheadle, sons of affluent professional families, I appeared the odd one out, the awkward, introspective loner. You might spend time daydreaming alone among the wild flowers near the River Tame in Reddish Vale and imagine fairies chattering in my head, outlining what I should do with my life, what might make me different. From an academic high as one of only two pupils from North Reddish Junior School to make it to Stockport Grammar, I plummeted almost from the day I arrived to the very bottom. It was as though wearing the black cap with yellow bands crushed my brain and savaged my concentration. After my dad's initial euphoria, each report acknowledging how the stuffing had been knocked out of me seemed to knock more and more stuffing out of him. His disappointment and what seemed to me at the time fury at the first two or three reports was replaced by a weariness, as he started to give up, if not on his family, at least on himself. With life becoming an increasingly complex series of puzzles he had no answer to.
Let's do it while the mood is right. I'm feeling appealing, I've really got an appetite. I'm on fire with desire, I could handle half the tenors in a male voice choir. Let's do it tonight.
Comedian Victoria Wood, who attended Bury Grammar School for Girls, once said, "If they like you in the north of England, they won't say you were wonderful, darling. They'll say you weren't bad. Or I didn't mind it." In one of her sketches, she writes, "Are you familiar with Marx?" she said. I said, "Well, I think their pants have dropped off." She said I was referring to Karl Marx, who, as you know, is buried in Highgate Cemetery. I said, "Of course I knew, but were you aware," I said, "that Cheadle Crematorium holds the ashes of Stanley Kershaw, patenter of the Kershaw double gusset? to my mind, a far bigger boon than communism.
After losing his job at Shell and never really getting another proper full-time one, we moved, when my second sister Jane was 11, to Offerton. The move was not a step up the social ladder, but it was still the right side of the Mersey, the Cheshire side, towards the tranquil, appealing Derbyshire border. It was while we were living in Offerton, with Dad clearly not sure from day to day which way to turn next, that our collective family energy started to wind down, so that we barely noticed the effects when, for 4 months, the commercial use of electric power was reduced to just 3 consecutive days a week. But by then, all my dad's weeks had a 3-day quality, severely limited by uncontrollable forces and the battle of wills going on inside his head. 3 days of action, falling towards 2 days, and then one day, on the way to no days at all. It was still a walk to school for me, but it took a little longer. And elsewhere, my walks around Stockport incorporated more land and landmarks and bookshops and record shops and opportunities to define and refine who I was. My new identity started to involve various venues around Manchester where I went to see gigs.
Johnny Marr, born in Ardwick, 31st of October 1963. Manchester rapture, rain and romance ringing in his ears, streaming into his songs, lifting the Smiths to greatness. A candidate to feature in an ideal Bob Dylan band.
The Free Trade Hall was where I'd seen my first ever pop concert, T-Rex, in 1971, as a 14-year-old travelling on my own on the 92 bus into the city centre and encountering a revelation. She's my woman of gold, she's not very old, uh-huh. The gorgeously self-conscious, attention-seeking exhibitionist Mark Bolan had become my own personal pop star, a supplier of an intense, fluid form of happiness. And here he was, in Manchester, within touching distance, infecting, intensifying my restricted local terrain. In Manchester, the outside world, containing different sorts of outside worlds, poured in the form of groups and musicians with their own sense of history, identity, understanding, and personal motivation. At the Free Trade Hall after T-Rex, within months I went to see David Bowie, Lou Reed, Black Sabbath, Curved Air, Deep Purple, King Crimson, Soft Machine and Fairport Convention. I was exploring the world further, which separated me so satisfyingly from school and the cracking up of my remote failing dad, giving me a new sort of knowledge and therefore power. By the end of 1971, I was reading the New Musical Express, Melody Maker and Sounds. Music journalists became a new set of teachers in new subjects that didn't have names, but that settled around the ideas of thinking for yourself, relishing new directions, and being ready for anything. Another venue opening, as if solely for me and everyone else who felt the same way, was the Hard Rock and Village Discotheque. It was close to the Lancashire Cricket Ground and symbolised how my allegiances had completely shifted after initial reluctance from cricket to pop music. The opening nights were the 2nd and 3rd of September 1972, and on both nights, at more or less the exact moment he was becoming a self-defined living legend, David Bowie performed, beginning his shows with Let's Spend the Night Together, Hang On to Yourself and Ziggy Stardust. Now Ziggy play guitar, jamming good with weird and Guinness, and the spiders from Mars. I watched him closely during those fantastic and yet to be fully fathomed 1970s. I wanted to be that clever. I wanted to be that beautiful. Though he changing all the time suited how I was changing as an adolescent. His move from image to image, concept to concept, name to name was something I recognised as I went through all the planned and unplanned changes you go through as a teenager. I left school with no ceremony. Simply a dull final day walking away from the scene of the disaster, chucking away the ragged, ink-stained yellow and black cap I had never replaced since I was 11. Hearing my ambition to become a journalist, I was recommended by a weary careers official to use my 4 hard-won low-grade O-levels to get on an ordinary national diploma in business studies course. I skinny drizzled out of the college after a few months before I was 17 and began working in a bookshop at the bottom of a narrow, steep-winding hill under Stockport's ancient market. My 38-year-old dad thought my life was over now. Where could I possibly go from there? But I approached the bookshop as a positive part of my further education, surrounded by books for hours on end, occasionally disturbed by customers, but able to continue my reading and earn enough cash to pay for albums, singles and concerts. A regular customer was a solemn, eerie-looking young man called Paul, with eyes cut from coal, bracketed by long, lank hair parted in the middle, who always wore black. He would bring in copies of a 16-page magazine for us to sell, which he wrote and printed himself, called Penetration, after a song by Iggy Pop. I asked if I could write something for his fanzine, and ended up producing a few hundred words about savagely satirical American comedian Lenny Bruce and a review of Essex blues group Dr. Feelgood at the Free Trade Hall. Now 18, flattered and excited by seeing something I had written in print, I planned my own magazine. It took me about a year of nervous, fussy preparation to get the magazine together, into 1976. But the delays it took to organise what I had entitled Out There, because that's where I wanted to be, ended up being a positive thing. There was something missing in contemporary popular music at the time, something that was not obviously noticed or diagnosed, because there seemed to be enough music to find, enjoy, dissect, collect, plenty from the past to discover. The weekly New Musical Express was unmissable, and the John Peel show on Radio 1 was mysteriously, pragmatically filled with the endlessly new and the fascinating.
Mark Edward Smith, pitch black comedian, fierce philosopher, singer, memoirist, sadist, scholar, gentleman, lover, hater, drinker. He's born in Salford in 1957. He deforms the fall in 1976 to have raw music with really weird vocals over it, and for decades is its only continuous member. The fall songs doggedly rummage through Smith's taut, bustling mind, which is something to be scared of, which is inside the north, which is inside his mind, which is made up of words, chopped up blood and thunder, soiled berry blues and dank, cruel smells.
What was missing and what made it just in time, just around the edges into Out There, started to appear in the pages of the NME as a rumour, as a concert or two by bands with names more like ruthless revolutionary slogans, names with clear, determined intent, a long way from the floppy, hippie, gentle giant and juicy Lucy, or the prog pomposity of Genesis and Yes, which seemed closer to an Edwardian style of rock and roll than anything that belonged in the broken mid-1970s. What was missing made it to mundane and magnificent, mainstream and underground, fractured and dismantled Manchester in June 1976. And there I was, where I was, which enables me now to say, I was there. Ultimately, so that I could add a paragraph or two of facts and romance to history, which was swirling all around me, because that was my destiny all along. It was where my footsteps had taken me, one after the other, to the end of one journey, which becomes the beginning of another.
And tomorrow, the Sex Pistols' first gig, and everything changes as Paul Morley continues reading The North and almost everything in it, with additional voices from Paul Hilton. It was abridged by Viv Beebe and produced by Justine Willett. The shipping forecast follows in a minute or so, and in the meantime, we're sailing by. BBC Radio 4. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Friday the 31st of May. There are warnings of gales in Biscay. The general synopsis at 1800. Low 250 miles southwest of Iceland, 993, slow moving, filling 997 by 1800 Friday. Azores high, 1035, slow moving with little change. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. West Viking, northwesterly 4, occasional rain, fog patches, moderate, occasionally very poor. East Viking, north at Cira, south at Cira, east 40s. Northwesterly 4, increasing 5 or 6. Showers, fog patches, moderate or poor, occasionally very poor. West 40s, Cromarty, 4th, Tyne, west Dogger. Variable or